It's Ann Liguori and Talkin' Golf on The Fan.
Wow, good morning and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, May 16. How are we doing? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Wow, what a great week for golf, right? The weather has been gorgeous. And I'm sure all of you were excited to get out there and play golf as I was. In fact, this past Tuesday, Travelers had their media day on the TPC River Highlands course. What a gorgeous day. And I had a blast playing with Bob Galb and Chris Moore, both part of the WFAN family, as you know. Bob, he told some classic Mike and the Mad Dog stories. And Chris Moore, he really does a fun Mad Dog impression and other impressions as well. So they had me laughing the entire round. It was just so much fun. And the TPC River Highlands course, it's a lot of fun to play. It's par 70, 6,841 yards from the tips. We did not play the tips. But Golf Digest named TPC River Highlands one of the top 10 golf courses in the state of Connecticut. And Connecticut Golf Online named it the best private course in the state six straight years. So that back nine, I got to tell you, I love the back nine. You have 15, 16, 17 beautiful holes tucked around a lake. 15's a par four, 16's that sweet par three. 17's a par four going back along the lake. And then you have the finishing hole, par four. And Stuart Sink, who won it back in 2008, called 15, 16, 17, 18 four of the most exciting finishing holes in a group anywhere in the world. And yeah, there have been some incredible finishes. Chez Reavy, I think it was 2 years ago in the third round, he rallied from six shots back to six shots ahead after shooting a record-tying 28 on the back nine, carded to 63. And he went on to beat Keegan Bradley by four shots. Bubba Watson, back in 2018, he rallied from six shots back, shot a 7-under 63, had a birdie on the 18th. And, of course, Jordan Spieth a couple of years ago, playing in the Travelers Championship for the first time, he holes out from the bunker on the 18th for birdie to win. So a lot of many cool moments to talk about from that tournament. And this morning, Nathan Grube, the tournament director for the Travelers Championship, he'll join us. We'll preview it. It's coming up June 24th through the 27th. And it's always fun to visit with Nathan Grube. And also joining us this morning, one of the great amateur players in our country, Nathaniel Crosby, the youngest son of the late Bing Crosby. And Bing was a huge golfer, and he did so much to bring golf into the mainstream years ago. And Nathaniel was the 1981 U.S. Amateur Champion. He played on the 83 winning U.S. Walker Cup team, and he captained both the U.S. winning Walker Cup teams in 2019 and last weekend at Seminole. Congratulations to Nathaniel. What a week that was. We'll talk to him about that. So, you know, he has a very rich history in golf as a player, both amateur, and he played a couple years on the professional golf tours in this country and in Europe. And then he became a businessman in golf. He was the president of Tony Penna Golf Company for 10 years. Then he worked with Orlemar Golf. And I'm sure he has a lot of great golf stories playing with his legendary father. Little Hollywood, little golf. It's a fascinating combo. So Nathaniel Crosby is going to join us at about 7:40. All right, some of the top sports stories in golf. The AT&T Byron Nelson. The final round is today. It's going on at TPC Craig Ranch Club outside of Dallas, Texas. And Sam Burns, familiar name. Burns having just won the Valspar Championship. He's a 20 under. And he leads K.H. Lee by one shot. Charles Schwartzel, Matt Kuchar, Jordan Spieth, Alex Noren, they're three shots back. And it's the fourth 54-hole lead or co-lead that Burns has had this season. And he's vying to become the first player since 2008 to win his first two PGA Tour titles in consecutive starts. So he's playing lights out, no doubt about it. Now, they've moved up the starting times. They're going to start at 8 a.m. with the final pairing going at 10 a.m. Eastern due to the terrible weather forecast in that area in the afternoon. So they're going to go out in threesomes and hoping to get it all in before the bad weather comes. All right, we have the PGA Championship coming up. Looking forward to being down there at the famed Ocean Course on Kiawah Island. And you remember the Ocean Course, the site of the 1991 Ryder Cup War by the Shore, with the U.S. team beating the European team 14.5 to 13.5 points, winning back the cup really on the 18th hole of that final match. Bernard Langer missing a 6-foot par putt, which would have won his match and clinched the Ryder Cup for Europe. They just needed to get to 14. But the U.S. team won, and it was the first win for the U.S. since 1983. The War on the Shore. Love that. And then, of course, the Ocean Course hosted the PGA Championship back in 2012, which Rory McIlroy dominated. It was his second major title. He won it by 8 shots. So Rory will have great memories when he returns to the Ocean Course. And of course, he won his first tournament in 2 years at Quail Hollow recently, the third time overall in his career that he's won at Quail Hollow. So I'm sure he'll bring a lot of confidence to the Ocean Course at Kiawah. And I'd love for him to win it. I'd love for Jordan Spieth to win it. He's one of my picks as well, Jordan Spieth. If he wins the PGA Championship, it would complete a career Grand Slam for Spieth. And this would be a great time for him to do it. He's just playing lights out. He won the Texas Open in April, his first victory since winning that Open Championship back in 2017. So with having won the Masters and the U.S. Open and the Open Championship, Jordan Spieth needs this PGA Championship or any PGA Championship to complete a career Grand Slam. So I'm rooting for Jordan. And of course, Xander Schauffele. I think if I'm picking three people, you know, my three top picks to win this week would be Rory, Jordan. And Xander's he's been so close. In his first 15 major starts, he has 8 top 10 and 5 top 5 finishes. And at the Masters, man, he was breathing down Hideki Matsuyama's neck before that terrible performance on the 16th. But if he can, you know, just kind of delete all these mistakes, that's the key to golf, right? Play mistake-free, play flawless. But Xander's, he's kind of perched for a major soon, so maybe this would be his week. I mean, so many guys can win. That's what makes it so exciting. Dustin Johnson, of course, he missed the cut at the Masters, and then he pulled out of the Byron Nelson, citing soreness of his knee. You can't count DJ out, but I just don't think he's as sharp as he needs to be heading into this major. Hey, did you see that great video that his fiance Paulina posted on social media? Dustin Johnson doing a backflip off of a boat. Now, that's smart, right? Right before a major championship. But it was a pretty tall boat or yacht, whatever it was. And I'd give him, what, a 9 out of 10 points for form. And a 10 for difficulty. It's pretty, if you haven't seen it, it's pretty impressive. He was pretty high up there on that boat, and he did a beautiful backflip into the water. All right, some other news. Phil Mickelson should accept a special exemption. He did accept it into the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. That's coming up June 17th through the 20th. And look, why not? He's been a runner-up at the U.S. Open, a record 6 times. He grew up in the San Diego area, raised his family there. He has 10 top 10 finishes and 29 appearances. Unfortunately, he's really played terribly this year. He's ranked 116th in the world, and you have to be in the top 60 to qualify. Or you can qualify in sectional qualifiers, but obviously he won't have to do that now. So last year he said he would not accept a special exemption, but with the pandemic, the USGA revised the exemption category, and there weren't any local or sectional qualifying tournaments last year. And so they expanded the field to the top 70 in the official world golf rankings would get in instead of the usual top 60. So Phil got in last year, and this year he got that special exemption. He said in quotes, "You can't win if you don't play. You got to be in it to win it, right?" And he said he's honored and appreciative of the USGA for the opportunity, and he looks forward to playing in his hometown on a golf course that he grew up on. So, hey, we're always rooting for Phil. He's one of the most popular players on tour. And so good for the USGA that they gave him that special exemption. You know, it's probably a matter of Phil just swallowing some pride, accepting it, get in, and, you know, now go and play some golf. He's missing a US Open for to complete his career Grand Slam. All right, in other news, Annika Sorenstam, she'll be playing in the US Senior Women's Open. That's going to happen July 29th through August 1st at Brooklawn Country Club in Fairfield, Connecticut. She retired back in 2008 after winning 72 career LPGA titles, 10 majors, including 3 US Open titles. So she turned 50 last October, so this is the first year she's eligible to play in the Senior Women's Open. And good for her. I mean, I remember playing in a member guest in Lake Nona, where she lives in Orlando, and she was playing in that member guest a couple years back, and she said, "Ann, I just haven't really been playing much." But she's starting to play more. She made the cut at the Gainbridge LPGA. It was her first start since 2008. I know she played in the Tournament of Champions in Orlando earlier in the year as well, so she's playing a little bit more. This past Friday, was it Friday? Boomer and Geo called me to ask me how to pronounce Paula Kramer's name. Now it's spelled Creamer. You would think it's Creamer, but it's Paula Kramer. She received a special exemption to play the US Women's Open, and that's going to be held in San Francisco at the Olympic Club, June 3 to 6. Anyway, good for her that she can get in there. She had season-ending wrist surgery back in September 2017. She was planning on returning last year, but after the pandemic kind of wreaked havoc on the schedule, she decided she would just rest her wrist. And so, boy, she's had a couple years not playing. She's 34 years old, so she's hoping to resume her career. So she got a special exemption to the US Women's Open. It's Paula Kramer, not Creamer. Oh my gosh. Anyway, you can't write this stuff, right? That story, I don't know if you follow this story about the NCAA reps canceling the NCAA Women's Regional Tournament, which was supposed to be held in Baton Rouge on the University Club course there. The director of athletics at Fairleigh Dickinson, this guy named Brad Hurlbut, he stood on the steps. I don't know if you saw this video, but he stood on the steps of the club with a couple other people, and he basically told these women that the course was playable, but not playable at a championship level. And then, you know, of course, the players objected. They're all there. They're excited to play in their regional tournament. So they're basically canceling this tournament because of wetness on the course. And they started like complaining, you know, kind of wanting to have some explanations and what's happening. And he abruptly basically ignored all their concerns and walked back up the steps. Then you had this woman, Julie Manning, the chair of the NCAA Women's Golf Committee. She goes on Golf Channel and said that it's very difficult to ask these golf courses to give up the courses to commit further than they've asked of them on the front end of the bidding process. She said, in the end, we did follow our procedure and our manual that was put together decades ago. And she said, fortunately, never thought this would happen. It has not happened until this year. So wait a second. You need a manual to tell me how to proceed in a situation like this? You have all these women, all these teams ready to play, and they cancel the tournament? The conditions are the same for everybody, right? The players are used to playing in all kinds of conditions. Maintenance crews can normally get the course ready for play, no matter how wet it is. And if the course is that bad, can't you postpone the tournament by a couple hours or even a day? Anyway, they had no backup plan. So it was very poorly handled, in my opinion. And then you read that Barstool Sports announced that they were organizing a tournament in Arizona next week for the teams that got basically screwed when all this went down in Baton Rouge. So stay tuned on this saga. But you have to feel bad for these women. You know, well, how can you just cancel a tournament like that? All right, coming up, we are going to catch up with Nathan Grube, the tournament director of the Travelers Championship. But first, let me tell you, at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
Ann Liguori is talking golf on Sunday morning with you, right here on The Fan.
All righty. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Talking Golf. And as you know, the Travelers Championship, it's quickly approaching June 24th through the 27th. At the TPC River Highlands course. And joining us now is Nathan Grube, the tournament director of the Travelers Championship. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Nathan. Good morning.
And good morning. Always a pleasure being on. Appreciate the time.
Oh, my pleasure. And great to see you this past Tuesday at the Travelers Championship Media Day. It's just good to get together again, right? To see people and to get out there and play some golf.
Oh my gosh, I know you and I were talking about that. I know when we saw each other in the parking lot, it's like a live person. This is amazing. So, I mean, we had that. I mean, because we had nobody at the course last year, and to actually, you know, see the media out and to see, you know, friends that, you know, we hadn't seen in a long time. It was great. And I think that's just, you know, going to be something we're going to see a lot more of in the next month or so. So, but it was great to see everybody.
It's a fun course. It doesn't beat you up. It's Audubon certified. And I swear you guys must pump in audio of all those birds chirping, right?
Can you hear them in the background? I hit play. We're just like Augusta. No, it was actually, you say that about the course. I mean, Dustin said that in his, Dustin Johnson, in his interview on Media Day, he said, you know what? He said, it's a fair course. He said, it lets you make a birdie, but if you are off just a little bit, he said, you can bogey any of those holes out there. And that's, I think, what the guys like about it. It's fair. It rewards you for good shots. It punishes you for bad shots. I mean, it's a par 70. So on paper, it kind of looks like, okay, maybe I can take advantage of this. But if you are just off a little, it will leave its mark. And it's great to hear guys, you know, like when Dustin said that, when Jordan won that year and he said that, and Rory, like they like the golf course. And we're very, very lucky to be able to have it as, it's kind of the stage for the guys.
It's a great course. And just from an amateur standpoint, when we were playing it Tuesday, as we approached 14, I told Bob Galb and Chris Morris that, come on, guys, let's finish strong. So Galb and I had birdie putts on 14, but we both parred that hole. Then Bob and Chris proceeded to birdie 15, and I parred it. And then we got kind of preoccupied with hitting the Travelers, that red carpet landing area on the lake, which is so much fun. My gosh, that is just so great, that thing.
It, you know, honestly, the red umbrella that floats in the middle of the lake, this was a project of years ago. We were talking, Andy Bissett and our team were talking, Andy's with Travelers, and they said, hey, let's put something iconic out there in the middle of the lake. And we're like, all right, let's do a floating red umbrella green. And everybody went, that's a great idea. And then we went, how are we going to do that? And so, you know, we tested so many things, Ann, like, you know, how to make it receptive to a golf ball, what to put under there that can handle floating, how do you make sure it doesn't tip? You know, I mean, we looked at so many different things and videos on how to get a golf ball to stay there. But I swear, everybody that comes through there, players, caddies, amateurs, like that's one of the biggest things. Like, hey, I shot 63 today, but I hit the red umbrella. So it's become a big part of the tournament.
It is really a fun thing to do, but and to, you know, to be able to not only hit that area, but if, you know, it's hard to have the ball just stay on that red landing area, so that it's really challenging. But let's talk about the tournament coming up. You have a lot of star players who announced their commitment to play a while ago. You have world number one Dustin Johnson. You have Bryson DeChambeau. You have Bubba Watson. You have Jason Day, Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, Justin Rose, Paul Casey, Mark Leishman. And how important is it for a tournament to get early commitments from star players like this, Nathan? And I guess the question is, does that happen often at other tournaments?
Well, to answer your question initially, it's huge, right? So the PGA Tour model is just very different, right? You don't have teams that are guaranteed to show up in each market. You know, you don't have a roster that you know is going to show up and play each time. You have a PGA Tour event, and then there's any one of, you know, 300 guys, you know, based off various status and things like that, that could show up at your event. So actually recruiting a field and going out and getting certain players to play is a totally different dynamic than any other professional sports organization. So I jokingly tell people that sometimes. Imagine if you go to a Nets game or a Knicks game or a Mets game or something, and you have no idea who's going to show up on the field. You just know there's going to be a game, but you really have no idea who's going to play. And people look at you and go, well, that would never work. I'm like, well, it works every week that way on the PGA Tour. You know, like you go out and build a field. So to have guys commit early like that, I mean, it's been a process. I mean, initially when you go out there and, talk to guys about your tournament and your date and your field and your course and the experience for them and their families, like it takes a while to build those relationships, but we've been very lucky. I mean, you know, Andy from Travelers, he comes out on the road and talks to the guys. And I mean, over the years, it's been awesome. And I mean, last year we had 9 of the top 10 in the world play. This year, to your point, I think we have 4 or 5 of the top 10 right now. And we still have, 35 days to go. So it's really important to be able to get that out there early. And the guys know that. And so if they know they're coming, they let us, talk about it with our fans and our sponsors. And then it really makes a big difference.
Yeah, sure. And it shows their commitment and, it shows how much they really respect and like this event, obviously. Because players have until the Friday before, I think it's 5 p.m. on the Friday of the week before the tournament to commit. So you don't need these guys. These guys don't have to really commit until the last second. But they know how much it helps Travelers to have these early commitments. And, you have the U.S. Open the week before, right? So it's kind of hard to plan your schedules that far in advance. You don't know how you're going to feel. It's a kind of a grueling week after week schedule, right? So to get these guys to commit early is just spectacular.
Well, it is. We're very, very fortunate. And to your point, it's like the guys literally have, and I understand why. I mean, till the Friday before the tournament. So, I mean, how do they feel? Are they battling injury? You know, what's the weather look like? How have they been playing? Like, so they have a lot of things that factor into why they commit late. But I tell you what, it's there's one guy, I remember Rory, oh gosh, this must have been like 2014 or so, talking to him about it. And he knew, he's probably the guy that knows his schedule 1 to 2 years in advance more than any other player I've talked to. Because he said, hey, I can't this year, I can't next year, but I really like how 16 or 17 looks. And I'm like, what, you're planning your schedule that far? But, and he's an anomaly. I mean, most other guys, it's like 2 weeks out. They're like, okay, you know what? Yes, type thing. So it's very different. But I would say the vast majority of the guys will wait, again, to see how they feel from an injury, from a life standpoint. There's a couple guys that know in advance, but I would say 98% of them really wait till late.
Do you know if Rory will come or not?
Well, he's a great friend of the tournament. Again, he is trying to figure it out. There's so many things with the global schedule right now, the golf schedule, like, what tournaments in Europe are happening. So I would say for this year, he's still trying to, look at his schedule and go like, okay guys, here's the deal. There's a lot of moving pieces with where tournaments are getting moved, what's happening across the pond. So we're talking to him. We talked to him actually at Wells for a while, and he's still looking to see what's going to happen with the global golf schedule, I would say. This is kind of a weird year from that standpoint.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how Brooks Koepka plays, not only at Travelers, but this week at the PGA Championship. He was on such a roll. He won 4 major titles within a few years of each other, and then coming down with a number of injuries. I know he did not make the cut at the Byron Nelson, but boy, what a talent Brooks Koepka is. It's always exciting to watch him play.
You get something like Brooks, who is, I mean, it's historic what he's done, right? I mean, the number of majors he's won and the time frame that he won them and the back-to-back majors. I mean, it's just stuff that doesn't happen. He's one of those guys, though, and you know this, you know Brooks. Like, he and Dustin are just, like, the most chill professional golfers, probably just people in the world, right? We're just professional athletes where it's like, yeah, hey, all right, I want another major. You know, and it's like, no cartwheels, no nothing. So
I know,
like,
right?
To have a guy like Brooks, and what's pretty cool is his brother, Chase, Monday qualified for our tournament last year. So, I mean, for you know, everybody who knows that, like, it's one of the most grueling ways to get into a PGA Tour event. You play 18 holes against, you know, 50 other guys, and the low four scores get in, right? It's just an absolute grind to do it. And Chase qualified on his own for our event, but then had the WD because of COVID. And so we told him that happened last year. And it's a big deal because Chase doesn't have his card, and to get into a tour event's a big deal. And so after he had the WD, we called him a couple hours later once we heard that he had the WD. And we said, look, Chase, if you need an exemption next year, you have it because you earned it, right? Like, you had to withdraw because of COVID. So if you need it next year, like, we want to guarantee that you're going to be in our field next year. So Chase is coming back and Brooks is coming back. So that'll be kind of fun to see the brothers play at Travelers this summer.
Oh, that was the right thing to do. He's a really nice guy, Chase, you know,
yeah,
and it's probably
tough
to live in the shadow of his brother, who's won four majors, right, in such a short period of time. But he's a really good player as well. So now, you normally have an entire week's worth of events. You know, you have the Women's Day, you have the Military Appreciation. Is any of that happening this year or no?
So I would say a modified version of it, right? We're going to be better than we were last year. You know, like last year, obviously there was nothing except, you know, the tournament itself. But to your point, over the years, we've kind of built this history of, like, I think we had like 53 special events in 2019, to your point, from Women's Day to Military to baby showers to concerts, you know, all these things around the golf tournament.
Right.
But this year, it definitely is going to be different. A lot of stuff virtual, you know, but not the, you know, 750 people at Women's Day in one big tent. You know, we're not doing the concerts and things like that. So a lot more stuff virtual, but I would say with the limited fans on property, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a sellout, I'm sure, pretty quick. And it's going to be about the golf and about walking around, I think, and seeing everybody and people just getting out. To your point, like when I saw you at Media Day, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, hey, you know, when we just talked in the parking lot, like, people are just excited to come back and get out and be at an event together. And so we're really going to celebrate that this year and hopefully really, you know, be able to bring all that other stuff back online in 22, where everybody is physically together in these large rooms and things like that. So I think we're going to focus a lot more on the golf this year, to your point, with the field that we have and, you know, just everybody being together.
That would be awesome. And the tickets go on sale Tuesday, May 25th, correct?
They do. They do. We have two tiers of tickets this year, May 25th. Some limited capacity. My gosh, people, the emails, text messages, phone calls, like, hey, can't wait to get back. Can't wait to get back. Is it start at 10 a.m.? And, you know, when do tickets go on sale? So we've historically had some events, like you mentioned, like Women's Day, that once we put the tickets, you know, they sold out in 11 minutes and, you know, stuff like that. Like, I anticipate, you know, that type of situation. But we're excited. We rolled out a couple ticket programs that we've had some sponsors. They came on and they sponsored a military ticket. So military is still going to be able to get a ticket for free. And we had a sponsor come on for healthcare workers. And so they're going to be able to get a ticket for free. And then another sponsor came on to sponsor tickets for kids. So we, even with limited capacity, we had sponsors step up and say, look, we want to subsidize the tickets for these groups so that they can actually still get out as our guest for free this year. So again, our sponsors have kind of rallied around this version of the Travelers Championship. So, but all of those things will be announced. Actually, they were announced at the end of this week and into next week, and then tickets go on sale to the public May 25th, to your point.
And Travelers donates 100% of net proceeds from the tournament to charities, which is incredible. And I know that's a special day when, you know, your team presents the checks, and the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp, which was started by Paul Newman back in 88. I know they're one of the key beneficiaries.
They are. And Ann, to your point, I never get tired of saying that hey, the PGA Tour is so different. 100% of what we make from the tournament goes back to charity. And I mean, it that kind of rolls off the tongue, but it really, when you stop and think about that, again, it's not like any other professional sports organization out there. And it's really cool to be a part of that. And to your point, camp, Paul Newman's camp, I mean, my gosh, it was, you know, 07 when we started that relationship with them. And they're just, it's a special, special place. I mean, you go out there, you see the camp, you see the kids, you see these kids who have lived half their lives in hospitals because of, you know, various conditions and diseases, and, you know, their parents, and they bring them out, and the kids, you see kids running around like kids, and you see the parents crying going, I've never actually seen my 11-year-old be an 11-year-old. And like, they build this camp like a hospital so that the kids can do all this stuff. And it's, I mean, we can't raise enough money for them. I mean, if every year we're motivated by that to raise as much as we can for them, because you see the magic of what happens there.
Very inspirational, Nathan Group. Thank you so much. Can't wait.
Oh, my gosh. And we'll see you in 35 days, if not sooner.
35 days and counting. Nathan Group, Tournament Director, Travelers Championship. Thanks again. Coming up, two-time winning captain of the U.S. Walker Cup, Nathaniel Crosby, son of the legendary entertainer Bing Crosby. But first, let me tell you, at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
You'll miss me. It's Sunday morning, and you're talking golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Dream a little dream of me.
All righty. Welcome back to Talking Golf, and let's get right to my next guest, Nathaniel Crosby, two-time winning captain of the U.S. Walker Cup team. Congratulations, Nathaniel. Thanks so much for getting up early for us.
Yeah, your Sunday mornings aren't my best moments, but I'm up, ready for you. Good to be connected, Ann.
Especially after celebrating all week, I can only imagine, right?
Well, we try to limit the celebrations, but all the kids dispersed and they're getting ready for the NC2A championship next week at Greyhawk. So everybody blew out of town when I was just getting ready to welcome them to hang around the neighborhood.
I guess, knowing you, what a great week it was. And what was more difficult, overcoming that stomach bug that players on both teams got hit with, or actually beating, you know, the U.S. beating Great Britain, Ireland?
Well, the whole event was a miracle that it happened at all. I think there was a lot of discussion about postponing it, and it would have been so unfair to the guys that were waiting and had decided to delay their turning pro until after the NC2As and play another semester, you know, forgoing the chances of maybe getting some invitations and on the tour and trying to get their card with a 12-month season as opposed to a 6-month season. So the event happened. It wasn't delayed. Then we get the norovirus, which is a terrible stomach virus that you get from sometimes on cruise ships. And it went through both teams, including the captains, and I'm telling you, it wasn't fun.
Yeah, I mean, normally, you know, I've had that, and it takes you a long time to recuperate from that. So the fact that these guys could go out there probably not feeling 100% and still play as well as they did is just incredible.
First time we've ever had, or the Walker Cup's ever had, alternates, and it was only a COVID-related strategy to bring two alternates from both sides. And they changed the documents at the last minute. I was a little involved in suggesting they do so because we still had four players on both teams that hadn't caught it. And we were able to substitute in and out, which we did once. I think they did twice, to actually play the full schedule of matches.
Yeah, I know Ricky Castillo, a sophomore at University of Florida, he went 4-0. Cole Hammer, I love that name, Cole Hammer went 3-0-1. And you had the highest-ranked squad in Walker Cup history with 9 players in the top 20 of the world amateur golf ranking. So I'm sure you expect great things from these guys in the future.
It's been the best privilege of all, is not only to get to know the kids over the last 3.5 years and be a part of their lives, but to meet their families. As you might imagine, part of my ritual to be ready for this assignment – was to go back to golf tournaments that I played in 40 years ago, and it was like being in a time warp to go back to Point of Woods where the Western Amateur is, the Porter Cup and Niagara Falls, and some of these amateur tournaments. And there's really not too many people in the gallery. And not to suggest that the golf isn't fantastic, because the golf is great, but you get to meet the parents, because sure. The parents, as brothers or the siblings, are generally the only people watching. And I've gotten to know all the parents as well as the players, and now I'm an extension of their support team.
And I read an article that you and Rory McIlroy were having a drink before this Walker Cup, and you were discussing USGA titles and how you have the upper hand.
No. You got to get your facts right, man. You got to get your facts right. There's okay. A lot of hearsay out there on this story. Rory and I are neighbors at the Bears Club, right. And we had a block party. And Luke Donald has seen me get into a glass or two of tequila and understands that I can start talking about my junior record at the drop of a hat, which is subtly annoying to a player like Luke Donald, who is number one in the world. But the Terlatas and the Bateaus and Luke Donald and Rory were on either side of me. And I, again, had just dabbled in a glass of tequila and had suggested to Rory that I asked him how many USGA medals he had. And, of course, I have the uncelebrated medals of being low amateur in the U.S. Open and medalist in the U.S. Junior, in addition to winning the amateur. So I knew I had the 3-1 advantage on him with him merely winning the U.S. Open. So he quickly replied to me that he had the right medal. And if I wanted to come over and touch the trophy, I was welcome to at any time.
Exactly. He won that U.S. Open. I was there at Congressional back in 2011. Well, I love this little competition you have with Rory. So we'll be continually watching that. Maybe what do you have now? Is it 4-1 or...
Well,
how many?
I wasn't counting the Walker Cups or the World Amateur.
You must cut. You have to catch those.
Well, then it would be a full six that I have.
So, you're dominating that head-to-head.
Yeah, I think his is a moving target, and mine will be stagnant for some time to come. But I did text him that my trophy this past week was bigger than his.
Well, I know you're the youngest child of the legendary Bing Crosby, and one of my favorite memories, literally in all of golf, was playing golf with you and your brother Harry at the Crosby with your mother, Catherine, dressed in all white from head to toe, driving that VIP cart around the golf course, watching you and your brother go at it. I really love that tournament. It was played in North Carolina for years. And how's your mom doing? And do you spend much time with her?
She's 88 years young, and she's doing great. We didn't see a lot of her this past year because of COVID. I didn't want to come back and be the Grim Reaper and, bring the virus into the house that we all grew up in. But my sister is being her guardian right now to make sure that she stays on her schedule. But she's doing great, and I remember the day that we played, and I had to carry the conversation the whole day. You got a lot of awkward silence with my brother, but, I carried the deal.
Yeah, you guys, it was great to see you trying out, you were out driving him, and I mean, he could hit the ball too, so there was a little sibling rivalry going on there, no doubt.
Harry is actually, it's been very annoying my whole life that he has outdriven me. He's, for whatever reason, he works out more than I do, but he's about 30 pounds lighter, and he bombs it. He in his heyday when he was playing practice rounds with Fred Couples, he was out driving Fred. And we're talking 20 years ago, and Fred was in his prime. So, he's always been a bomber. It's been very annoying for me, my lifelong annoyance.
Well, talk about growing up playing golf with your dad. I know in your book, 18 Holes with Bing, Golf Life and Lessons from Dad, you said that everything Dad accomplished in the entertainment field was a distant second to this game that animated him more than anything else. And then you said your mother described your dad as a golfer who sang.
Yeah, I think that Dad might have traded some of his awards, his music awards or his Academy Award for a U.S. Amateur trophy, or even just being a slightly better player. But it was his lifelong passion, and probably – as an adult, you know, I retired from competitive golf when I was about 26, so I eclipsed Bobby Jones by 3 years. But Dad probably played a lot more golf as an adult than I ever did. And it's interesting because I still have a target to beat. He had 13 hole-in-ones in his lifetime, and I'm stuck at 10 right now. So I've got to eclipse that.
So did you learn to play? I read that you learned to play golf from your nanny.
I had a great Irish nanny who made me her pet, and her name was Bridget. She was a golf pro from Ireland. And
wait a second, your nanny was a golf professional? A lefty,
no doubt. And,
oh my gosh!
The story goes full circle with Bridget because we had a nice big backyard, so she taught me the grip, and I was out in the backyard hitting plastic and eventually, you know, regular golf balls around a probably an acre's worth of backyard. So I was out there toddling around until I was able to graduate to the big course, which was Burlingame Country Club, to play with my dad, which happened at about age 9 or 10. And then we were off to the races, playing over 120 rounds a year every weekend, and golf trips to Mexico, where we had a place in Guadalajara. But the nanny was a great lady. And the funny story is that when I was playing in the Irish Open with a former Irish Open champion named Paddy Skirrett from Lahinch, and he looked at me, because everybody knows where everybody went when they leave Ireland. He says, "You had a nanny named Bridie Brennan." And I was like, "Yeah, I sure did. I was her favorite." And he says, "Yeah, well, I was one of her favorites as well," indicating that there might have been something going on at some point in their lives. But at any rate, Paddy Skirrett made a hole-in-one, and he was front-page news in the Dublin newspaper the next morning as a ceremonial player because he was in his 60s. But Bridie Brennan was our nanny, and I named my daughter after her.
Oh, is that right? And she was a pro golfer. That's unbelievable. So talk about the Crosby Clam Bake, because obviously the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am, one of the great events on tour. And what are some of your favorite memories of the Clam Bake as a kid?
Well, you know, the greatest memories really are my very first memories, which inspired me to play. But Dad would organize my brother and I to be sitting at the first tee to greet the players and hand out the scorecards and pencils to the players. So the likes of Jack Nicklaus and Ray Floyd and Weisskopf and all of these guys became, I became starry-eyed looking at these guys in the late 60s, early 70s. And one of the great stories is that Sarge, who had won the U.S. Open, Orville Moody, had a simple par from right in front of the green on 18 to win the tournament, and Ray Floyd and Jack Nicklaus were one shot back, and Ray Floyd's cracked open his second Olympia beer in the press room, and I'm watching it on TV while he's giving an interview, and I basically tugged on Ray Floyd's shoulder at age 10 and told him that Orville Moody had just missed a 1-foot putt, which meant that he'd better put his beer down and get to the 15th tee for the playoff.
Well, glad that you warned him. I also love the story of Jack Nicklaus taking a phone call from your dad, but he didn't know it was your dad, and your dad was singing happy birthday to him, and it was so noisy in the room at the lodge that he had to ask your father, like, "Who is this?" You wrote about that one, but
that's pretty funny. But the best one, of course, is when my mom, who's from West Columbia, Texas, and my dad was courting my mom, and he called her up, and the uncle answered the phone, and he said, "You know, is Captain Crosby there?" And he said, "Well, who's this?" "It's Bing Crosby." And the uncle replied, "And I'm Harry Truman," and hung up the phone.
I'm sure that happened a lot. Well, we have to close very shortly, but what are you working on these days, Nathaniel?
I'm doing a golf book right now. I'm trying to organize some travel groups tied to private golf courses. So I've got a lot of irons in the fire. I'm a serial entrepreneur, always trying to take half court shots that aren't very easy, but dedicated to seeing them through. So I've been working on organizing kind of a variation of what Exclusive Resorts business model was, that was so successful between 1997 and 2007, and I just think that that model will work in a good climate. So I'm after it and trying to make it golf-centric.
Well, listen, say hey to your mother, Catherine. Say hey to Harry. Thank you so much for getting up early for us, and let's continue this conversation another time. I just love hearing the stories.
I saw that you're trying to invite yourself to Seminole, so we'll see how that goes.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'll let you know when I'm back in Florida. Thank you so much, right. Nathaniel Crosby. Oh, my goodness. I'd love to play Seminole.